Okay, thank you. So I'm just going to, because Dan Jansen gave a talk yesterday, which hopefully all of you went to, I'm just going to talk about one small part of the DNA barcoding of the Lepidoptera from the ACG, and that's the prospects for species discovery using DNA barcodes and nuclear markers. So yeah, I'm John Wilson from the Canadian Center for DNA Barcoding. And I wanted to start just by acknowledging there's lots of people involved in this project, so I wanted to start by acknowledging those, especially my advisor, Paul Hibin, and Dan Jansen, who provides all the specimens that I work on from the Area D Conservation, Guanacaste in Costa Rica. You all probably know what DNA barcoding is by now. It's sequencing a standardized region of the cytochrome C oxidase 1 gene from the mitochondrial genome. For Lepidoptera, we've settled on 657 bases, and that's the DNA barcode there for this species of Acrolepiopsis incitella, and also the male genitalia of the same specimen, just to as a comparison there. So the DNA barcode would be a means of a character set which would hopefully you'd be able to use to identify a specimen of this species to this species, as opposed to the traditional approach where you would use the male genitalia. So this is just to demonstrate again that these are five or six species from this particular genus, and you have the male genitalia and the DNA barcodes. As you can see, each of the species has a very different distinct sequence. And in more detail, they have diagnostic base positions which you can use to hopefully identify a new specimen, an unknown specimen, to one of these species by comparisons with the database. So it's a method which is perhaps easier for non-specialists who aren't familiar with this kind of morphology, can be applied to every life stage, so not just males, to all the life stages and sexes. So the aims of DNA barcoding, which hopefully I've demonstrated with those previous images, is to advance species identification through the analysis of short standardized gene regions. But also, we hope that it has a complementary role in species discovery. So other people in my lab have been working on the family Sphingidae, and there's a campaign to sequence CO1 barcoding fragment from every single species of Sphingids in the world. And they're very close to achieving that. And the preliminary analyses have indicated that perhaps there's 30% more species in the family than was previously estimated, as 400 new species that they've possibly discovered through sequencing a standardized region across the whole of this family. So we already know that the barcoding segment doesn't work as a perfect barcode. There's variation within species as well as between species. So how would you objectively distinguish the intraspecific variation from interspecific variation? And recently in Systematic Biology, there's been a wish list for species delimitation published. One of the points that they mention is that you can integrate data from multiple loci. And another requirement for species delimitation with molecular techniques is to determine species limits without having those limits defined a priori, so you can discover unanticipated species directly from the molecular data. So in the barcoding literature, people have already used genes, concordance amongst independent genes from the nuclear genome and the mitochondrial genome, as a method to discover new species. And this is some trees from a paper by Monica et al., a group of researchers at the Natural History Museum in London. And they sequenced beetles, a group of unknown beetles, for both of these genes, and used the pattern, the points of concordance on the tree, as indicators of where the species boundaries lie. from these specimens. Also, other researchers in Guelph have done a similar thing that with the parasitic flies from the Lepidoptera of the ACG. They used ITS1 and 28S, both in ribosomal genes from the nuclear genome. So my objective is to investigate the use of nuclear genes at the species level in Lepidoptera in order to corroborate the hypotheses that we generate from the DNA barcode groupings. So I'm looking at the same genes that have been used previously. These are widely sequenced genes in molecular systematics generally. So in this particular species of nymphalid butterfly, which had a very divergent pattern of CO1 and DNA barcodes when we sequence them, they is split nicely and with a high sequence divergence into two separate groups. Sequencing 28S RNA from the same specimens, we actually ended up with the same pattern that it splits into two groups. So this is perhaps good evidence that these might represent two distinct species. So the other gene that I mentioned before, the ribosomal internal transcript spacer 1, has also been recommended as a complementary region to CO1. When the CO1 is showing a pattern that you may have two species within what has previously been considered a single morphological species. So to look into this gene further, I sequenced specimens from the ACG, geometric specimens from the ACG, and specimens that we didn't have any kind of name on at all. And I sequenced them for CO1 and ITS1 and used different methods of species delimitation, which has been used previously in the barcoding literature. The thing about ITS1 is it's highly variable. That's why it's been recommended as a good species level marker. But it's also length variable. So when you're analyzing these sequences and comparing them, you need to have hypothesized indel events in the sequence. So a sequence alignment method has to be used. And there's lots of different methods that have been used in phylogenetics. And each of these also can have different parameters of the how much the you weight the insertion of a gap or a deletion in the sequence. So using the different methods and different parameters on the ITS sequences, you can end up with sequences of very variable length, like from 1,500 to 700 base pair difference in the data matrix that you end up with after an alignment program. So using these sequences, all the different hypotheses of homology in this sequence, and the three different methods of delimitation that have been used before, you can end up with highly variable estimates of the number of species within a sample. So the conclusion from this is, unless you have a good idea of what species are there in your sample a priori, then ITS1 with its length, with the variable length, is not a very good species level marker. So it fails on the criteria of the wish list of species delimitation. So as an alternative to these genes, 28S is less variable than ITS1, but also will require, depending on how divergent the specimens are that you're including in the analysis, will involve some kind of sequence alignment method. So I would suggest that a different approach would be to use a nuclear protein coding gene. And Wenglis is the gene that's been sequenced most frequently in Lepidoptera and molecular systematics. Now actually, in some of the cases that I've looked at, it does show species level differences as well. This is Aedes isidora from the ACG. The CO1 barcode showed a pattern of two distinct lineages within what is currently thought to be a single species, and sequencing Wenglis from the same specimens showed the same pattern, which indicates that this could also represent two species in one. Obviously, we require collaborations with taxonomists and morphological work to try and confirm this. So I've been talking about discovering species with DNA barcodes, and I just wanted to finish with an example of where DNA barcoding has actually reduced the number of species. So this is Ativa punctella, or that's the current name that it's most people use for this species. And we have sequences from the ACG and from the States and Canada as well. And we, in our database, it actually had two different names, Ativa punctella and Ativa agatica, which, based on the barcoding result, are actually just a single species. So this is a case where two names are actually a single species. So it's the opposite case of discovery. And barcoding is very good to try and discover these synonymies. But in the literature, there's actually all these other names as well. There's been lots of names for this species. It's been described many times. So by using barcoding, you can try and establish whether any of these names are valid. And then you have to go back into the literature, see which is the oldest name and which one is actually valid for this species. And this is something that Jean-Francois Landry is actually working on at the moment. We have the type specimen of Agatica from the Natural History Museum, and we have we've been given permission to sequence the CO1 barcode from this type. So this kind of model of sequencing extranuclear genes when we discover these highly divergent lineages with CO1 is something that I want to apply to all the other families, or a few of the other families, as many as I can, that we've been sequencing from the ACG. And this is just an example of the number of barcodes that we have. These were all quite a black light traps in the ACG. So yeah, in summary, there's high congruence between CO1 and nuclear genes. That's the general pattern observed. The choice of gene that you use is important. The pattern of the DNA data provides a robust hypothesis which should be tested with morphology, and we'll be extending this to further families of Lepidoptera. Thank you.